From the WCVE Newsroom, I'm Charles Fishburne. Patients come from across the country and surgeons from around the world to benefit from the practice and pioneering work of VCU's Dr. Catherine Holloway, who has just been listed among the more active in the world in deep brain stimulation.
Well, we're talking about movement disorders, which are a problem that affect the automatic motor programs of the brain. So the patients aren't paralyzed, but they can't exactly do what they want to do. So, for instance, a Parkinson's patient may want to walk through the door, and instead their feet get stuck to the floor, and they can't move forward. Give them a few more seconds, and maybe they'll be able to go, but it's back and forth like that. Sometimes they can move, and sometimes they can't. The essential tremor patient just wants to bring a cup to their lips, but instead they shake it all over the room, and they spill everything that's in this inside the cup. So these are things that make simple everyday movements really complicated.
She relieves the debilitating symptoms of Parkinson's disease, dystonia, and essential tremor by inserting a probe deep into the brain, guided by MRI, and her own device, which functions like a GPS for the brain, and with the patient conscious and alert, finds the very spot and the precise electrical charge that reduces and often eliminates the symptoms.
So it's instantaneous.
Yes, yes.
Amazing.
Yes, it is. Truly amazing.
She then implants a fine wire and electrical controller, which can be adjusted as needed. She has done over 500 of these procedures, and for her Parkinson's patients, the success rate is 40 to 60% improvement in 90% of the patients. For tremors, about an 80% improvement in 80% of the patients.
Is this an age problem?
It can be. It is more prevalent the older that you get, but we do see it even in teens and people in their 20s and 30s. The Parkinson's disease is progressive, and that makes it very difficult. So early on in the course of the disease, they can take a pill, and everything is just terrific. They go on about their lives. But then over time, those pills start to lose their effectiveness, and they suddenly desert the patient when they're in the middle of something. We have patients that have gone to the grocery store. They're walking fine. They're doing great. And then they're stuck in the middle of the aisle, and they can't move forward. They may not even be able to get into their pocket to get another pill. So it's terrible.
So what exactly is it that you do?
So I take the patient who has reached a point where their medications are no longer helping them adequately, so that they're struggling with these problems again. And we can offer them a surgery that will improve the quality of their lives significantly.
You actually insert a probe into the brain. Describe to me how you do that.
Well, it's like a pacemaker wire, but it's for the brain, and we have to drill a hole through the skull, but then we can pass it through the brain, but it has to be in exactly the right spot. We start off with imaging, so we have MRI scans and CT scans, and we have something that's like GPS for the brain that allows us to point inside the brain and get to exactly where we want to be. But because everybody's a little bit different, sometimes we have to adjust that position based on that patient. So in order to do that, we listen to the brain cells, and we also test stimulate. And we see what the brain activity is. It's typically very hyperactive in these areas of the brain. And then when we turn on the stimulator, we can reproduce what we'll be getting if we're to implant it there.
And the patient is awake and able to tell you what's going on?
Yes. We have them asleep for the uncomfortable parts, drilling the hole in the head. I don't like to hear the dental drill, so I don't want anybody to have to hear my drill. But then we wake them up, and they wake up very quickly now with the anesthetics that they have today. And in just a few minutes, they're talking to us, and we make sure they're comfortable. And then we can do this testing. So, for instance, for tremor, we might have them take a bottle and hold it up to their lips and see if they can do it without sloshing the liquid.
What part of the brain is affected here?
These are called the basal ganglia. So they're a part of the brain deep in the center of the brain.
That's the troublesome area.
Yes, this is what's affected by these particular types of diseases.
So you have this probe in here, and it has an electrical charge?
Yes, and that charge is provided outside the operating room by a battery pack that we put in underneath the skin on the chest. In the operating room, we're using something that's not implanted to just test it.
After you determine the area and the appropriate charge, then you can duplicate that with something that's implanted, a battery that's implanted?
That's right. And that battery that's implanted is adjustable. So as the patient's symptoms change, we can adjust the stimulation.
How successful is this procedure?
It depends on what symptom we're treating and what disease we're treating, but the success rate can be as high as 80 to 95%, or we can only be taking care of 40% of the symptoms. So it varies. For tremor, we expect an 80% reduction in the tremor in 80% of the individuals that we place the stimulator. And that's a tremor pretty much of any kind. We can fix that. For the Parkinson's disease, the slowness in walking, the stiffness, slowness in movement of the arms, we expect a 40 to 60% improvement in about 90% of our patients.
How many of these procedures have you done?
It's over 500 now. And that's just the parts where we're putting the leads in the brain. It's closer to 1,000 when you take all the different types of surgery that I've done.
And how has this experience helped you and your team?
It has been a growing experience for us. We've had a growing team. We started back in 1997 with just a few key components. And over time, we've built two comprehensive multidisciplinary care centers, one at the McGuire VA and one at VCU. We have all aspects covered with this. So we have nurses that work with the patient during the surgery, hold their hand, talk to them, help with the testing. We have neurologists that evaluate the patients prior to surgery, decide whether they're appropriate candidates. Other neurologists that come into the operating room and help us with microelectrode recording. We have other people that help with that as well. We have neuropsychologists who evaluate how folks' thinking and mood is, because these sorts of things can also be affected by these diseases, so we have to know where they are before we start. We have physical medicine rehab specialists, speech therapists. It just goes on and on. We just have a great team.
So like everything else, practice does make perfect.
It really does. It really does. And having a constant quality improvement program is really important. So we're always looking at our patients, how they're doing, how we might be able to improve them. If we have somebody that didn't get the expected result, we start asking why and see how we can make it better next time.
We talked about Parkinson's and the medication that ultimately wears off in every case.
Unfortunately, it does. Unless some other disease gets you first, we can expect it to progress past what the medicine can do.
And there's so many different forms of Parkinson's. How many of them are treatable this way?
It's only the Parkinson's disease, the actual true disease that responds. There are things that look like Parkinson's disease, what we call Parkinson's Plus, and they have fancy-sounding names like progressive supranuclear palsy, even I can't say it, multisystem atrophy. And these diseases look like Parkinson's early on, but they progress much more rapidly, and they don't respond to the medication in any significant way. That's what we use to screen out patients that we don't think will respond.
Are most of your patients Parkinson's patients?
Yes. About 60% of the deep brain stimulators I've implanted were for Parkinson's disease. Another 25% or 30% is essential tremor. And then there's another disease category where we make a huge impact, and that's in dystonia. The most dramatic one is one that's a genetic dystonia. It affects children when they're 7 or 8. They start getting these abnormal motions. And within a few years, they can be incapable of walking, taking care of themselves. They're terribly disabled. I can't imagine how distressing it is for the parents of these children. And when we do the deep brain stimulation for them, there's a dramatic reversal of all of that. That's where we get our 95% success. These kids move from not being able to walk to being able to carry out all normal activities.
I would guess that you have patients from all over?
Yes, we do, scattered all over the United States. The vast majority of them are in sort of from Pennsylvania to Florida and probably east of the Mississippi, but we draw from all over.
How do they learn about you, and why did they come here?
Yes. A lot of it is word of mouth. The Parkinson's community, the essential tremor, each of these have patient groups, and they're all on the Internet. And so things get passed around. But in addition, we've had an outreach. The VA, at the McGuire VA, we have a what's called a PADREC, Parkinson's Center of Excellence. And we're actually responsible for taking care of the entire Southeast for the VA system. So we have patients all the way down to Florida. And so sometimes some veteran knows someone else in the state who's not a veteran, and so they'll come up. In addition, I obviously am nationally known amongst centers. I go and give lectures. I have surgeons come from around the world, people from Great Britain, from New Zealand. Surgeons come to watch me perform surgery so that they can learn my technique.
How about the future? What excites you about what the possibilities?
It really is incredible what's about to happen. The deep brain stimulator is a simple tool, and what it does is dependent on where you put it in the brain. It's just like real estate, location, location, location. So if we understand a disease process well enough to know what circuit is affected and where those nodes are, we can then start to treat that disease by putting in a deep brain stimulator. So, for example, we were involved in a trial looking at treating depression. Now, this is not your average everyday depression, but severe intractable depression that doesn't respond to medications. Patients who are suicidal have had many hospitalizations for their depression. And placing a deep brain stimulator to treat that kind of depression. And the early results have been mixed, and I think we're going to continue working on that. That's not FDA approved, but that's something in progress. Another thing in progress that we're really excited about, hopefully getting started soon, we're looking at treating Parkinson's dementia. So Parkinson's patients generally don't start out being demented, but over time they can start to lose cognitive abilities as well as their motor abilities. And so this has been the really rough thing for me. We have patients that I've implanted 15 years ago, and they're up and they're walking around and motorically doing very well, but their spouses come to me and they say he doesn't understand what's going on anymore. He's lost his memory. He's not able to function because of his dementia. And so these are the people that I really want to be able to help. And so we're looking at a different target within the brain that is known to deteriorate both in Parkinson's disease and Alzheimer's. And there's evidence that we should be able to improve their short-term memory and some of the other deficits that they have. But this is a trial that's not yet started, but we're very excited. We're working on getting it together right now.
So fixing mobility problems mm-hmm. is just truly the tip of the iceberg. I mean, you're talking about changing almost any brain function that one can imagine?
I think so. All we have to do is understand the circuit, and we should be able to fix it.
How does this compare to ultrasound?
Yes. So ultrasound is a great way to make a hole in the brain, the way that it's being utilized as a focused ultrasound. And we've done studies to compare a hole in the brain, or a lesion is what we call it, to deep brain stimulator years ago, and we have found that the deep brain stimulator is safer than that. But for some patients that can't have a deep brain stimulator for some reason, the focused ultrasound is a great way to go.
So ultrasound basically neutralizes the problem if properly used, but the deep brain stimulator has all of these other possibilities as well.
The real difference between the focused ultrasound and the deep brain stimulator is the focused ultrasound is a one-time thing. It can't be adjusted. It can't be reversed. And so as the disease progresses, it's not possible to keep up with it with the focused ultrasound. In addition, if the hole in the brain is made too large, there's nothing that you can do to change it. Whereas with a deep brain stimulator, we just turn it down.
So basically what you do, you take a probe, a wire, mm-hmm. you find a spot, mm-hmm. you determine how it acts towards various electrical charges.
Mm-hmm.
You pick the best one.
Mm-hmm.
You install a battery that can duplicate that,
mm-hmm.
and they're up and running.
That is correct. That is correct.
And it can be adjusted over time.
That's right.
I love it. Can an ordinary human being have this kind of operation? Is this something that insurance pays for? Is this something that you have to have a special classification for?
Now, this has been FDA approved for tremor and Parkinson's disease since 1997. So it's paid for by all major insurance groups. For Parkinson's disease, essential tremor, and dystonia, it also can be used to treat obsessive compulsive disease. But the other things that we've talked about, the depression and the dementia, these are not yet FDA approved. So these are all things that are in trial. And in addition, there are trials ongoing for trying to treat obesity. Another thing that is FDA approved is for Tourette's syndrome through a humanitarian device exemption.
I'm looking for a short descriptive way of talking about the possibilities, and I
mm-hmm.
think we may have done it, but
mm-hmm.
it blows my mind,
mm-hmm.
literally,
yeah.
what it is you're fooling with here.
Yes, yes. So I think that the possibility of a deep brain stimulator is the tip of the iceberg because it's the start of the brain-computer interface. It's the ability for us to interact with the brain. Right now we know how to turn things off, but we're starting to learn how to turn things on. And eventually we may be able to talk with the brain in a real way. There is a device right now that can do that. It's something I implant for epilepsy. It's called a NeuroPace device. And we put electrodes in the brain, and they can sense when a seizure is starting. So it has an EEG pattern that there's a little computer in this little battery pack that says, oh, that's a seizure. I'm going to stimulate it. And if it doesn't work, it knows to try it again and again. And then it keeps all that information, and the patient can download it to his neurologist through the phone. And the neurologist then can say, well, let's try changing this and that and improve the way that it interacts with the brain and get better seizure control.
We're talking about the ultimate smartphone app.
That's right.
Is there anything else that I haven't asked you that you think is important? Any takeaway here?
Oh, one of the things that we haven't talked about is two things that I've been really concerned with is patient comfort during the surgery because they have to be awake. I really want the patient to be comfortable. And the way I was trained was to use a stereotactic frame. And a lot of people have seen this on TV. It looks like a big metal cage that's put over the patient's head. It's bolted to the skull. The patient's head is bolted to the table. And it's really scary. Actually, in real life, it's tolerated better than you would think. But for patients thinking about surgery, that's one of the things that they can be very frightened of. We had, in the early 90s, developed this tool called frameless stereotaxy, which is like this GPS for the brain, and we could use it for brain tumors. but it wasn't accurate enough to use for deep brain stimulation surgery. So I worked with some folks in industry to help devise a device that would allow us to make it even more accurate. And this was something that we did trials on, and we compared it to the frame to make sure that it was just as accurate, had the same kind of results. And we published that in 2005, and now I'm happy to say that that device was bought by Medtronic, one of the major companies in this field, and it's used around the world. And that's why I have these surgeons coming from all over the world to learn how to do it with me.
Dr. Catherine Holloway is a professor of neurosurgery at Virginia Commonwealth University and the neurological director of the VCU Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorder Center and the McGuire VA Pedrick Center. For Science Matters, I'm Charles Fishburne, WCVE News.